Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Welcome, ladies, gentlemen, cats and dogs, all who listen to the Woke Bros. We are back with another expedition. I am Michael Jamal Abdul Aziz Brooks, the one who does the Cardi B impression. Ow. Joined by my comrade, Big Waz, Wazni Lombre. How you doing, Waz?
Yo, you know, I'm just chilling, man. I'm down here in the LES. I'm just shining my Timberland boots.
You go shop for Tim's?
About to hit the streets of Manhattan after I record this, you know what I mean? I'm so in my element. Had a slice for lunch, you know what I mean? Definitely got some dumplings in Chinatown. I'm really in my New York City bag right now. Only thing I ain't had, real talk, is some jerk chicken, which probably gonna change tomorrow.
Do you remember when we talked about how in LA, we were talking about how at the live show, how you were getting all LA. And I was talking about the hot yoga class that I did before the show and juices and everything else. And Anna Kasparian and Nando Vila, the family, they were looking on with a lot of LA pride, a lot of LA happiness. But I don't know, man. I can't, obviously I don't claim New York like you do, but I'm like a hybrid of Massachusetts and New York.
Oh, no, nah, you know, you knew your thing at this point.
I mean, especially when you consider like the family thing and when I was here when I was little and disposition, like, yeah, I'm a New Yorker.
Yeah.
And that is the, when you live here, you don't in any way, like I don't take advantage of a lot of shit here because I'm just so fucking busy.
Right.
But the comfort to know that you could have that slice or whatever, you really miss it when you're not here.
Yes. And, you know, I was telling my girlfriend this because, you know, we're staying down here in the LES, which, you know, before I moved for at least 4, 5, 6 years was always my favorite neighborhood to go to in New York because, like, there's so much shit you could do. And it was one of the few places that still had that vintage New York grit. So I'm staying down here and it's cool to just walk out of my hotel room and just be right in the mix, right? And I was telling my girl, I was like, you know, I love being in LA and I love my new life and all of that stuff, but there's just something about New York. It's still got that magic. There's still some magic left in New York. I know all my New York friends are like, oh, New York is finished. The corporations are taking over. They're making this place into a fucking Disneyland. But man, I gotta say, coming back, still got that magic.
Yep. No, there is an energy to it. That's not bullshit.
100%.
So, and of course, speaking of a certain energy with it, that's not bullshit. The junior evil genius, Rob Lopez, guiding us through this expedition. As always, you like your props there, Rob?
I like it. Not too strong, not too light, just right in the middle.
That was actually very strong, Rob. You weren't listening correctly. That was I said it like a ongoing powerful current like New York City that even Dwayne Reed and hedge fund capital can't destroy. That's actually high prop. So maybe you should do more sound drops.
Rob, guys are terrible at taking care of their health, man. Whether it's a knee injury, a back injury, or something even worse, guys are usually more comfortable just rubbing some dirt on it. The same is true for erectile dysfunction. Can you even believe that? Something that important? Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to get checked out by a doctor and get treated for erectile dysfunction online. Roman is a one-stop shop where you can get where you can chat with a licensed U.S. physician who can treat ED and, if safe and appropriate, ship medication right to your door. With Roman, there are no waiting rooms, no awkward face-to-face conversations, or uncomfortable trips to the pharmacy. You can handle everything discreetly online. All you have to do is visit GetRoman.com/BOM, complete an online visit, chat with a doctor, and if the doctor decides that it would be safe and appropriate, they'll shift the genuine medication right to your door in discreet, unmarked packaging. Guys, go online and get checked by the doctor. Erectile dysfunction is a problem that guys don't tackle, but with Roman, it's really simple. So take care of it, man. Seriously, your lady's going to appreciate this. Or your guy, you know. Who knows? For a free online visit, go to GetRoman.com/BOM. That's GetRoman.com/BOM for a free online visit. GetRoman.com/BOM.
We got a bunch to get to, as we always do. And first, we're going to start with Andrew Yang. I have had the misfortune of talking about this fucking guy, so I get his whiny ass people bothering us on social media all the time. But actually, real quick, I want to ask Rob real quick too, because I'm just generally like outside of a certain like political coverage bubble. Like, just real quick, Rob, if you had one word to describe what your impression of Andrew Yang is, what would that be?
Oh man, what's hype beast? Is he a presidential hype beast?
Wow, that's perfect. That is perfect.
Just see him out here with the, I know the vibes, let's go Knicks. So I'm just like, bro, relax. What's your healthcare plan, bro? Relax. Wow. On the Breakfast Club. Like, bro, what, like, you're gonna, what's up with my student loans? What's going on, man? What are you doing?
Well, we did some research, and actually, people who aren't podcast producers, turns out they don't care about student loans that much.
All right. Let me not digress it into an impression. I don't really like the guy. Waz, what do you think of Andrew Yang?
You know, I kind of think, in a certain hand, he's like, when you think of somebody like Bezos or Peter Thiel, and I guess you shouldn't put Bezos and Peter Thiel in the same bracket, but he's kind of a more benevolent version of those tech billionaire types. But in a certain way, I kind of think he's even more dangerous because of that, right? Like, because he kind of seems like a wolf in sheep's clothing. When I think about his universal income plan, that's basically his like spiel, right? Like his elevator pitch, right? It's like, yo, everybody get $1,200 a month. Like, for me, that's somebody who has their eye on the ball in the sense that, look, eventually this shit is going to become untenable, right? Where we have people like me, Andrew Yang, billionaire, and then people who can't pay their rent. And it's like a vast majority of the population. Like, eventually this is going to become untenable. So why don't we preempt that and offer these people a little bit of pennies, right? Like, just feed them a little something before they become enraged and hangry. Like, that's sort of my mindset when I think of an Andrew Yang. But, like, because a lot of people have hit us up and on the internet and wanted us to talk about him. Could you give the people sort of what Andrew Yang is elevator pitching to the public so far?
All right. So what he's saying is basically, like, it's a couple of things that are actually kind of mashed together, which I would actually like to kind of distinguish.
Yes.
So one is this thing that, like, robots are going to come and eliminate a ton of jobs. And I will be the first to admit that, like, I wouldn't feel comfortable making that prediction one way or another myself. My understanding from people that are a little bit more, you know, grounded, maybe making predictions and analysis that is a little bit less like, you know, like, yeah, it's just going to happen and 30 million people done, say that definitely automation is real. And any further, you know, loss of jobs obviously is significant, but not necessarily in the scale and at the pace that he's talking about. And also, I would just add, well, actually, I'll get back to that later. All right, so that's one thing. Then the other thing is a message that I actually think, honestly, like, if you did it correctly, I would support, which is that, you know, the Democratic Party and progressives in general, like, you know, it's like very weird. Like, there's that old, like, racist narratives of, like, the undeserving and deserving poor, right? Mm-hmm. And now you have, like, a certain type of woke person that just have flipped that. So now it's like, well, the deserving poor are all these, like, fucking rural white people that there's a huge amount of disdain for. And it's another way of blocking the fact that, of course, we need universal programs when it comes to things like healthcare. That is just for every single person, no bullshit. So there's a part of him that's kind of like saying, you know, you can't just, like, you know, you can't just hate on and demonize the truck driver in the Midwest or whatever. You got to help them. And the thing is, like, I agree with that 110%. And I hate all of the, like, elitism and disdain. On the flip side, Andrew Yang is really fucking sloppy with that shit, which we'll get to later. And then the third point is the answer to all of this shit, whether it's automation or, you know, or the collapse of the Midwest or the opioid addiction. The bottom line is to give everybody $1,000 a month. And where it gets very sketchy is that the $1,000 a month will be, you know, basically it will come through, not through a wealth tax, not through, you know, forcing Amazon and Apple to pay their fair share, not doing anything like that. It will be paid for primarily through a VAT tax, which is a value added tax, like they have, like, in the UK, but it's very regressive is like the bottom line. You know what I mean? Like if you put a transaction tax on people's, like even just like their online transactions, you know, that matters. Like if somebody makes 30 grand a year, they have to pay a buck extra tax on each transaction. That fucking matters. You know, if you make a million, it doesn't matter, right? So it's a very regressive way of doing it. Then the other concern, just real quick, is that, and his people always freak out and have meltdowns every time we talk about this, but in some ways, to be fair to him, like he does, he will kind of say sometimes that he supports things like Medicare for All, which is obviously really important. But sometimes he kind of, he's framing it as you can choose your benefits or get $1,000 a month, right? And for some people, it might make sense if you calculate it to take that $1,000 a month. But I could tell you, you know, just even speaking personally, as someone who at different points when I was growing up, my family dealt with different parts of housing subsidies, food system, and things like that. If you are a family surviving on a kind of patchwork of programs and you opt for a G a month, you could be in a situation where, you know, that translates to real terms to less than what you were getting in benefits. So that, to me, the fact that he doesn't just say, look, this is $1,000 on top. Like we already don't have remotely enough social investment in this country.
Right. We're
spending double what we spend on food stamps and whatever else. And on top of that, here's some money. I would have no problem with that whatsoever. But that is sketchy. So anyways, those, but I would say those are kind of like the three things that you, the Democrats need to talk to blue collar people across the country, that robots are going to take everybody's like truck driving jobs, and that giving a G a month to everybody's the answer.
Yeah. When I hear the G a month thing, right. I like to think about, and again, we talk about Bernie Sanders all the time on this show. I get it. We're Bernie Sanders shows at this point, but I'm sorry. He's always effectively communicating stuff in his interviews when they try to like get him with a gotcha question, when they're like, well, won't Medicare for All raise your taxes? He's like, yeah, you'll pay more in taxes, but you'll pay way less in healthcare. Therefore, net, you will have more money in your pocket. Like, it's not that hard to understand. So when you say something about a universal income, if you're not talking about healthcare, if you're not talking about schooling, if you're not talking about housing on top of that, then it's basically a dodge, right? Like giving everybody basically 12 extra G's a year, I'm sorry, bro. Like that's not gonna solve everybody's problem. And that's not to poo-poo $12,000, because shit, man, if somebody gave me 12 G's right now, I'd be over the moon about it. But what I'm saying, what I'm saying is that these other issues kind of take precedent, right? And if you're not addressing these other issues in any of you, in whatever you consider to be your platform, it's hard for me to take you serious. And I just have a problem with the people of his ilk, because I feel like a lot of people have an issue with the idea that we should abolish the health insurance industry, right? Because people work in those industries and this, this, that, and the third. And I understand the unease with that, but like, people shouldn't be making money off of people's health. It's just that simple. And I don't think a lot of these guys feel comfortable just flat out saying that. I get it. We're the capitalistic center of the universe. I get it. If people are making money legally, we should be sucking their dicks for it. I get it. I get it. But this is, I just don't understand why so many people who aren't Bernie Sanders, quite frankly, have a hard time like just saying that. Like you should not profit off of people's health, you know? And I just think the Andrew Yang guy, like again, he just seems like a wolf in sheep's clothing to me, but he's a guy with his eye on the ball, right? Like a certain amount of these cats, and I think we've talked about this before on the show, where like Wall Street people, the banking people, they understand what the cost benefit of like a diversity initiative program or women empowerment program, like getting women in. They understand that doing that
putting a public face on something is going to help them get money on the back end. I think Yang is one of those, the few tech people who gets that, who's like, we got to put a good face on the thing, the things, the nasty things that we want to achieve in the end, right? And that's why I think he's dangerous. Whereas a lot of these tech people actually believe their own bullshit, right? Like, no, we are saving the world. We are changing everything. We are connecting Wozni Lambre to people in China through Facebook, like, right? Like, a lot of them believe their own bullshit. I think Yang is actually smart enough, perceptive enough to understand that, like, nah, we gotta, like, give people shit in order for them to let us keep raping and pillaging.
You know, that's funny, because I actually have to admit, and it's a funny thing, like, partially what's so repulsive about it is how, like, he's definitely got, like, the cults, and he's got the everything is unfair and you don't understand, and you know, you raise an object like, oh no, like the value added tax wouldn't be regressive. And you go, why? It's definitionally a regressive tax. Well, because Andrew says it won't. You know, like, very weird obsessive shit. But on the other hand, I do think that, like, my read of him, and in some ways this just doesn't matter, you know, like they will make a lot of point of, like, he's a good man, he's a good person, and he might be like a well-intentioned, you know, dorky guy who just has like a very simplistic view of the world, which would be basically my view. But I think that the thing with him is, like, I mean, it's really like, on one hand, I think from the Silicon Valley perspective, I have a friend who reads sci-fi. I don't read sci-fi much. I probably should, but I don't read it at all, and I should. But he said to me that he read some dystopian novel where the citizens of whatever, like, you know, whatever bad future situation they were in, there was a form of a UBI check, right? There was a form of, well, let's, you know, as you said earlier, like, let's take the pressure out a little bit. And I think that there is a vision of the world, including even, like, even of people who might just think, like, this is the best we can do, which is, like, you know what? Most people are not going to have they're not going to really have any power. They're not going to really have any lives. Like, democracy is going to continue to shrink. We're going to have an oligarchy. So let's just give them a little, like, you know, maybe a subsidy for, like, a little pod apartment and a little bit of a check so they can, like, order ramen and play video games. And I think that that is what it is, right? And so the other thing that really bothers me about Andrew Yang and is really disturbing about the following is not that, you know, if somebody said, hey, and it's funny because I'm glad you said that. Like, look, like, I completely understand. I've spent a vast majority of my life in the position where if somebody said to me, like, you know, oh, don't worry about getting an extra check, I would say, fuck you, right? Like, I get that. I understand that. And honestly, if the guy just was a single – if he had the ability and the intelligence to just say, like, hey, I'm just kind of like this oddball, you know, eccentric, but I kind of care about X, Y, and Z – I think everybody should have a UBI. My proposal is it's $2,000 a month. It's paid for by, you know, a tax on Apple and Jeff Bezos and everything. Then I would say that's great. Go around the country, and just so long as, you know, you don't end up, like, interfering with Bernie, cool, do your thing. But I think, you know, you look at all these interviews. On one hand, it's, like, so silly because it's like, dude, you're not going to be president. And he still is like, well, I'm going to pay for it this way, like acting like he needs to have everything planned out, which he doesn't. And then he'll always basically say, like, on one hand, it's all like, this is about the future and humanity first. And if we put our heads together, we can do it. And then it's always like, well, we can't do anything about Amazon. We can't have a wealth tax. We can't, you know, break up monopolies. We can't do any of that stuff. So my thing is like, look, if your view is that we actually basically can't solve problems anymore and pretty much we're just going to live like in a feudalistic tech dystopia, then yes, Andrew Yang's version of like give people $1,000, I'm sure is nicer than whatever the fuck, you know, some total evil maniac like Peter Thiel is cooking up. But I still want to live in a place where there's still democracy, where there's still Bernie, where there's still Cornel West, where there's still maybe a shot that we could actually really change things.
It just feels like the dude is talking out of both sides of his mouth. Again, at this point, I can't really take what he's saying seriously because he's not talking about the fundamental issues at hand here, right? And again, and I feel like I'm repeating myself, we talk about this shit on the show all the time. Like, legitimately, there were people who voted for Donald Trump who were concerned about healthcare. 2018 became a referendum on healthcare, right? Like, these are the important issues, even to the people on the other side. And so, you know, when this guy comes and he's got his little shiny object, it's hard for me to not look at that and say, come on, bro, do better.
Right. I mean, that's it. And so I think, and every time I see people like freaking out at me about it, you know, again, you could say like, hey, I think you're underestimating the importance of some of these arguments. Maybe you got to take the robot thing more seriously. But even the robot thing, if we had a democratized economy, then it could be great. Like, oh, people have to work less. Let's take the free time created by that to give people more free time, because we already have a society where, you know, housing, healthcare, food, you know, like those things are not worried about. And by the way, it's not as if we don't have a lot that, you know, people need to be doing anyways. We have like roads to rebuild and, you know, fucking people to mentor. There's so much shit that needs to be done. The other thing too, just real quick, and they always get pissed off when I say this, but they've never had an answer for it. And I'm sure that this is not like, definitely this is, this plan would work really differently across the country, right? Like I have no doubt that there should be more plans like this in specific categories. But like, yeah, if you were in a, you know, not expensive place to live and you're lower middle class, this probably is really good. So I'm not discounting it. On the flip side, I'm like, if you implement this in like New York, San Francisco, and you don't have rent control, this will just get gobbled up by higher rents.
San Francisco.
I mean, seriously. And
it's impossible.
They always say like, oh, that won't happen. But again, it's like, why? Like, look, he's got a plan for every other contingency, but no plan about regulating real estate markets. I don't know, man. Get the fuck out of here. Vote for Bernie Sanders. Get serious.
You know what I'm saying? Speaking of Bernie Sanders, Mike.
Yes.
We got our Democratic debates coming up next week. As a little preview, we're not going to try to predict, you know, the next Kamala Harris, Joe Biden moment, but rather I thought we'd do something different. And just talk about what we'd like to see these people talk about next week, right? At this point in the game, it's obvious the three front runners are Warren, Sanders, and Biden. Kamala Harris got a bump. It's now gone in the polls. Cory Booker's doing his Cory Booker thing. And I mean, that's kind of the beginning of the end of the serious candidates. Am I wrong for saying that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Cory Booker's really, I mean, I guess you've got the fucking Pete Buttigieg shit.
Oh, okay, Mayor Pete has a little bit of traction.
Mayor Pete is such trash. Mayor Pete, I hate the most. I hate, and honestly, like, his record on policing in South Bend, Indiana is disgusting. I think you're about right as far as the serious candidates go. I'm really in the point now where it's like the just incredible overwhelming bias against Sanders is annoying to me as a supporter, but it's also just like embarrassing as somebody in media. And I will say, I do think that, like, you know, with Warren, I wonder how things start to look when not everything is like going her way. You know what I mean? And I want to kind of ask, like, you're getting a lot of positive press benefit, and so many stories are framed as like, oh, well, Bernie's an asshole. We can't really say why, because, you know, because we're just irrational haters. But, and we all really know why, which is like, they're freaked out because of their class and professional position. But, yep. But Elizabeth Warren, she's, you know, she's reasonable, but she's also progressive and she has a plan, and we got to get rid of this fucking plan bullshit. That's another thing. But like, my thing is, at a certain point, is like, if everybody who wrote a positive article about Bernie Sanders always prefaced it with like, well, thank God we have somebody that doesn't have like some fucking like nerdy plan bullshit that has nothing to do with politics, and we have like a real clear communicator with a bold plan, everybody would say like, Bernie, when are you going to disavow all these mean things about, you know, Warren that all these positive pieces are saying? And so I'm kind of feeling that way about Warren. Like, when are, you know, like, okay, you're getting really gassed up from people whose primary thing is really just to destroy the progressive front runner. So I wonder how that dynamic works. But I think as far as the debate goes, honestly, like, probably I basically think that Bernie should pound Biden on the trade agreements and on being a subservient to the credit card industry. What do you think?
Yeah, obviously he should. I don't think Bernie has shifted into full on attack mode yet. And again, it's still early, right? Like, there's going to be plenty of time to hammer Joe Biden on his coziness with the banks and the financial service industries and, you know, his bankruptcy record and all of that stuff. I think he's kind of warming up to that. Even Warren herself is kind of – and that's her – and you know, to Elizabeth Warren's credit, that's kind of been her bag since she got into politics, right? Like hammering the financial services industries. So, you know, I'd love to see a little bit of that. Look, sometimes I wish when we, and I mean we, I mean the Democratic Party, who by default is the only party that represents progressives. Not to say that they're a progressive party, but they're the only party
that represents
progressives. I would like to see a debate where we only talked about our shit. Like, don't talk to me about tax hikes or tax or lowering taxes. Like, I don't want to hear that shit at a Democratic debate. Let the Republicans do that at their debate. And when, you know, when we have our two candidates, y'all can do that in the national debates. But like, I don't want to hear about that. I want to hear about what you want to do with foreign policy, right? I want to hear about how we're going to figure out how to stop these forever wars. Obviously, I want to hear about healthcare. And obviously, I want to hear about housing. You know, like, I want to hear about progressive issues at the goddamn progressive debate. Am I crazy for that?
No, exactly. And that's another thing, too, which is, why isn't there any progressive journalist moderating
this debate?
Right.
And you know, CNN, I honestly don't think CNN actually has an agenda here besides trying to make good TV, right? Like, sure, I'll, you know, Jeff Zucker and his types, like, they don't actually care about progressivism, but I don't think their agenda is to, like, squash it out. I think they put these, quote-unquote, straight guys on the panel to ask questions to make it seem like it's fair and it's balanced and it's this. I don't think they actually care about that. They just want to look a certain way. I don't think these networks like actually give a fuck about the substance, right? And so that's why we get a lot of these, quite frankly, like stupid questions. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, I just like to see people talk about the progressive shit that we care about. And yes, I want people to start finally hammering Joe Biden because, one, he's the favorite, and two, he's an asshole.
I want to see. I mean, honestly, I do. I definitely want to see. You got to hammer Joe Biden when the time is right. We've got to puncture, because I think like the Pete Buttigieg. I mean, first of all, Buttigieg is awful, and he's also a long-term threat to progressive politics. But I'm somebody like, to me, you know, Warren and Sanders are definitely not the same thing.
No.
And we got to start sharpening those distinctions and not letting people bash, you know, not only the best and most progressive candidate, but a someone who really is just running a completely different kind of campaign. And I feel like that whole thing about plans and all of this shit, it's like, it's look, it's cool to have good plans, but at the end of the day, like, you need to have clear, no bullshit, straight commitments, no question. But the real plan is, how do you actually get anything done? And that's about movement mobilization. That's why the fact that Bernie's campaign actually is a movement with a distinct media arm, it's not just that it's like, oh, that's nice, that's grassroots. That's like literally the only prayer of a possibility of achieving any type of progressive agenda. But so I'm kind of ready to start. And what was funny was they asked Elizabeth Warren that a couple weeks ago, like, how are you going to get all this stuff done? And then she's like, well, there's going to be a movement. And I was like, oh, okay, right. So again, Bernie. So let's stop.
Right.
You know, and so I think there's a lot of energy of people who around that campaign who are, you know, smart and well-intentioned, and there's some really good ideas, but they still don't want to deal with, like, no, we actually need to have a change. And that's, you know, the other part of the difficulty, right? Because I agree with you. I think on some level there's a lot of, like, they don't care specifically about anything and it's just a ratings thing. But I think, yes, when Bernie was at the Washington Post a couple weeks ago at a candidate forum, right? And the candidate forum is sponsored by Bank of America. And that is, like, hilarious, you know? And he walks out and he's like, this isn't really sponsored by Bank of America, is it? And, you know, he said it in his, like, kind of funny, charming sort of old man way. But he was making an actual point, which is, like, you know, a predator bank that has, like, multiple civil rights fines, helped drown people in the mortgage crisis. Oh, they're the sponsor of the candidate forum. And the journalists, like, they didn't even get, like, you know, oh, Bernie, what? Like, they literally were just like, yeah, what? Like,
yeah, of course.
So disconnected from these, you know, yep, what I'm saying? And I think that that's – so he's up against – everything, man.
Yeah, and you know, and I gotta say, part of me selfishly likes the idea that Elizabeth Warren is running close to Bernie, because I love the idea of her as a fallback plan. You understand what I'm saying? But I know in reality it's not going to work that way, right? It's going to be Bernie or Warren against Biden. Right. Like, that's how it's actually going to end up shaping out when the race becomes the actual race. So, yeah, Bernie needs to start distinguishing himself for sure. And I'm sure he's coming up with tactics and ways to do that, him and his team. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to actually progressive issues and topics being tackled head on. And you know, at this point, everybody knows Bernie's spiel. But what I love about that is that when he gets on an issue, right? And we've seen it because he got killed about his foreign policy stuff last go around, where people was like, oh, Bernie doesn't have a foreign policy, right? And we've seen him pivot to like, no, I do.
Yeah,
and
here's
what it is.
Actually, the best foreign policy. And I actually did more to stop the war in Yemen, prevent war with Iran. I'm the only candidate to come out and say that Lula needs to be free because he's a political prisoner. Like, yeah, I'm actually kind of doing it. And incidentally, I was right about Iraq and right about trade. And that's another thing, too, that does just kind of annoy me on the Warren tip, which is like, I think that we need to start saying, like, I don't understand. Look, on one level, like, whatever. I don't really care about labels in some ways, but it's like, that's another thing to me. It's like, okay, yeah, a progressive candidate who votes for every single military budget increase and has no vision on foreign policy and has had actually really bad stances on Iran, on the Middle East, and on Latin America, to me, it just starts to become like, you know, and I say this from the perspective that like what Bernie's done bad things on foreign policy too, but he's like the bare minimum and nobody else is up there. And I don't know how we can keep talking about somebody being a progressive presidential candidate. When you're president, the first area that you actually have the most power over is foreign policy. And so, you know, this is somebody who voted for every single military budget increase, including all of the Trump ones. And I'm not saying – like it doesn't negate the good things on Wall Street as an example, but it's like how can you just – like that's not a synchronized worldview. You know what I mean? Like that – there's – with Bernie, there's like a connection that allows him to say we're going to cancel all student debt and we're going to take the right stance in Brazil. You know what I mean? Like that is what I'm talking about. And that, you know – and that's never going to get to in the debate if you don't even at least have one actual progressive journalist. I mean, that's just such an incredible, you know, oversight. Like in the Republican debates, they always have some, you know, they have the supposedly mainstream anchors, and then they usually have some super crazy person to round it out.
Yeah, we need that on the left.
Exactly.
A new thing on the pod. It's a callback to the two dope boy days where Mike and Phil would proverbially dig in the crates and recommend something in the worlds of art, film, music, television, literature, you name it. This will be our first episode doing that. Mike, I know you listened to the Lost Tapes too, finally. What do you want to tell the people about it?
It's really good, man. Pleases me to say that it's really good. No, I mean, you know, it's just, we talked about the Life is Good record last summer. I always say Adam and Eve was the takeout track. That's up there in the pantheon. I still listen to that. Besides that, that album was garbage. And it was, you know, I mean, I shouldn't say garbage. It wasn't a good album. I don't know, it was garbage, but it was not a good album. And it was, you know, it was in the context of like another underperformance by Nas, and then it's produced by Kanye while he's doing his Trump summer. So it's just nice to sit back, listen, and, you know, like the song about Queensbridge politics, which is the sort of it's actually very touching, you know, like, yeah, like things were bad with my friends, with Prodigy, like really bad, and bad things were said and a book came out and, you know, you still, but you kind of think maybe it'll work out sooner or later. And now the man is dead.
Right.
And so like, this is what the song is about. You know, and then as always the case with Nas, and this was the same thing with the first Lost Tapes album, which was definitely like, you can't necessarily see it as like a cohesive album. So I guess that is one thing, but you do always have to say like, wow, like, and I say that, you know, I'm a Nas partisan, Nas defender. I think he's incredible. Right. But you would be delusional to not acknowledge that he's had a lot of misfires. And so when you listen to the Lost Tapes, it's like, wow, like, okay. You know, it'd be like as if every, you know, it's like anytime I did like a good, like Nation of Islam Obama bit on my show, I was like, yeah, yeah, let's turn the cameras off though. I don't understand, you know, but it's great, man. It's very nice to have the summer experience of just like a really tight Nas album. Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would like to say my recommendation, man, is Crit is here by an artist named Big Crit, Mississippi's own. I think Crit broke out around 09, around the same time as the Kendricks, the Coles, the Drakes. He had a really weird label situation where, you know, Def Jam didn't really know what to do with him, right? Like, he was a Southern artist, but he was also a content artist in that, like, his music told a story, had a lot of substance, was very personal. They didn't really know what to do with an artist like him. But throughout the years, you know, anybody who knew anything about rap would tell you that Big Crit was one of the best artists out. He's finally gone independent. He's doing his own thing. Usually he produces all of his own music. This album, he decided not to. He decided to work with outside producers. And I think the result is something, you know, a little bit more expansive than we're used to hearing from Big Crit. And so, man, I got a chance to listen to this album and it jams straight through. The beats are hard. And obviously, as can be expected with any Crit project, man, the content is there. The rhyme skills, the precision that this dude is on is incredible. I think it makes for an incredible summer album. All his beats, his production, he just has a feel for picking something with warmth and depth and some soul to it. I just think the God makes timeless music. It's actually... If you ever listen to any Big Crit interview, he said that's always his goal, right? He wants to make something that's going to stand the test of time. I think this album is another example of that. I'm excited to see what he does going forward. Now that he's independent, he's in charge of, you know, sort of making his own breaks now. So I would encourage everybody to listen to Crit is Here. I think it's one of the best rap releases I've heard this year, if not for a long time. So shouts to Big Crit. Go listen to that. What else do we do? We got any more house cleaning to do, Mike?
No, I mean, besides that, just, you know, check out all the shows. Check out patreon.com/TMBS, Michael Brooks Show on YouTube. We are just about our first 59,000 subs. So get on it. Buy your tickets. August 24th, Chicago live show. The pickup that I always promise is starting. Michael Brooks live show August 24th, Chicago at Lincoln Hall. Really excited about that. Come see us.
Of course, Count the Dings live in San Francisco at the Independent. That's October 12th. All our Bay Area people, please come out. Tickets have been moving. We got a few left. So don't lollygag because I don't want to get the tweets, the text, the this. Oh, I need a ticket. I needed that. You need to get on it right now. Those things are moving like hotcakes. Shouts to Rob Lopez, as always, man, being an incredible producer. You know, it can be hard to wrangle me and Mike sometimes, but he gets it done somehow every single time, man. So shouts to Rob Lopez. Shouts to the whole Compton Dings. Of course, TMBS community. And we will see you guys next week.